Hello, fellow baseball nuts, and a very big warm welcome to episode 11, like a Spinal Tap amplifier. I wish I knew what that referred to. What a great pleasure to have your company on the Johnny and Josh Show, joined as always by some Spinal Tap legends. JC, Eric.
Very complimentary, Johnny. Thank you
yes.
so much.
Is that a compliment? I don't even know what Spinal Tap is.
I was born on a sex farm. See, you don't understand that reference. I can't believe you don't get Spinal Tap.
This one goes to 11, no?
Johnny has not seen Spinal Tap.
That's breaking news. Before the news round, that's the biggest news of the day. Johnny's never seen Spinal Tap. What's the
matter? Go out tonight. Yes. And go, well, I wouldn't say go out and rent it. Just go on your computer and type it in and watch some scenes.
Go to your VA.
Can I suggest?
Go to Blockbuster.
Can I offer some insight to you three? Okay. I'm a man who loved Neil Diamond in my 20s. Am I likely to have heard of, to have witnessed, to have expressed, to have in any way enjoyed or indulged in Spinal Tap?
It sounds like something.
It's a comedy film. Okay, moving
on. In the 80s. All right.
In the 80s, I was watching the great movies of the 80s. I was watching Dirty Dancing 15 times. I didn't have time for Spinal Tap.
All right. We digress.
You know, this all makes sense because I remember once we took a flight to the World Series, not to the All-Star game together, and you were engrossed in a film on the onboard entertainment system.
Yeah.
I said, what are you watching? He goes, and you went, Firehouse Dog. Shh. Firehouse Dog.
Classic.
What's Firehouse Dog?
Exactly. I haven't seen Spinal Tap. You haven't seen Firehouse Dog. What's the difference?
On the level. Fair enough.
Well, anyways, welcome to episode 11. Moving on.
Okay. Well, guys, COVID update. All quiet on the COVID front, I think we can say. Fingers crossed. Am I right?
Yeah.
So far, so good.
We got a shot at making it to the bubble.
Hey, I'd like to point out, you guys, particularly you, JC, were very negative at the beginning of the season. We're never getting through this season, you said. I was Mr. Optimism. Eric, not so much so. David, totally not so, primarily because he wasn't a part of the first three shows. But I'd like to point out,
the great
JC,
days.
You were very negative. You were very pessimistic. You need to change that.
Yeah, I was definitely pessimistic. I worry about human life. It's something that you should embrace.
You are a warrior. You are a warrior, let's be fair.
I'm a bit neurotic, fair enough.
You are the only man I know who goes to an airport 8 hours before a flight.
Because I like to relax. I'm on the hurry up and wait style.
You're the one who goes to the airport 8 hours after the flight. So it's like,
I have only missed one flight in my whole life, and I'm a lot older than a lot of you lot, so...
Were you watching Firehouse Dog, or is what happened?
Yes, got completely engrossed. Okay, moving on.
Wait, can I give you this stupid stat I've been trying to get out before we're talking about flights?
Go on, Dave.
Not that it's so big or important, but now there's all this attention to it. And, you know, 26 straight days as of recording time, 34 out of the last 35 days, no positive tests. Thank you very much. I'll move on.
But that doesn't include the ancillary sites. Because the Brewers had two players who tested positive for COVID at their
it's not Major League Baseball and ancillary sites.
Have you noticed? You just can't help yourself, Josh. We've got some great news, but you have to come in with the big butt with the capital B.
It's Debbie Downer. It's Debbie Downer.
Hey,
right here.
Do you guys know that we all die at some point?
Wah, wah.
Okay.
It's a sound effect.
I think we need to move on very soon.
Speaking of sound effect.
Before we get arrested.
Okay, it's time for General News Roundup. Well, guys, we're going to first of all kick off with the Cleveland's manager, Terry Francona, will return to the Indians bubble for the playoffs. As you know, he's missed the whole season. Blood clot disorder, I think it was. And the Indian skipper, of course, since 2013, amassing a 669-518 record two-time AL Manager of the Year, and of course took Cleveland to the World Series in 2016. Erika, you're a West Ham fan. You know a little bit about having a manager managing from home. Is it possible?
Well, you know, if David Moyes of West Ham can manage from his living room, I guess why not? But apparently, Terry Francona, well, it's still unsure whether he'll be taking managerial duties once he enters the Cleveland Indians playoff bubble, or just be there as a consultant. That still remains to be seen.
Either way, he's going to have a positive impact. Why? Because he's a legend. He's a Cleveland legend. Talking of legends, Alex Gordon, very sad news, guys, has announced his retirement. 14 seasons at Kansas City Royal, a number two draft pick in 2005, very key to the Royals 2014 American League pennant run, and of course, World Series championship in 2015. Three-time All-Star, massive fan favorite with the Royals fans, not surprisingly. But Dave, really sad. He's going to be playing his last game for the Royals in front of no one. Clearly a Royals legend, but is he a baseball legend?
No. Nice career. Made his name, incidentally, in game one of the 2015 World Series, hitting that home run off Yuri's Familia. That's when he kind of got out into the limelight outside of Kansas City. 14 years on the same team. Very nice. Very nice. Cute stat. Good player. Not a great player. Three-time All-Star. Good glove. Good glove.
Seven-time Gold Glove Award winner.
Very nice glove. Good glove. Maybe golden, maybe a little silvery golden.
Smell the glove.
Dave, you say...
When you look at baseball, there's a lot of these guys around. That doesn't take away from him, but, you know, it's not Hall of Fame. It's a very nice career. Good fan.
You say that, and you know how much he made in his career?
A lot.
$117 million. Yeah. Dollars.
That's what a good career gets you.
Mate,
that's like Gouldy's bar tab.
JC, we made that in one season at Channel 5. So, I mean, that's nothing to sing at.
Move the decimal points over quite a distance and perhaps.
Absolutely. Okay, well, from one Royals legend to a Cards legend, Yadier Molina, with his latest milestone, 2,000 base hit this week, only the 17th Cardinal to do it. This is a stat I like about him, JC, and as a fellow catcher, you'll appreciate this. Played at least 100 games in every season since 2005. So we're not just talking about an all-star, a proper game player, but a real gamer, and you love a gamer.
Oh, absolutely, Gouldy, and I'll go out on a limb here and actually say, not a first ballot Hall of Famer, but I think he definitely merits tremendous Hall of Fame consideration. Now, he's a 9-time Gold Glove winner, 9-time All-Star, which means that he was at the top of his game amongst catchers. And not surprisingly, catchers are tremendously underrepresented, as far as I'm concerned, in the Hall of Fame. Only 19 catchers have been put in the Hall of Fame. It's the second lowest position. Only position that has fewer Hall of Famers are third basemen with 17. Each outfield position, right field, center field, left field, each of them have more Hall of Fame participants. So I think we need to open it up a little bit. As one of the greatest defensive catchers ever to play, and now with 2,000 hits, to me, he's a Hall of Famer.
Quick catcher quiz for Josh. I'm going to name a catcher. You're going to tell me if Yadier is better, okay?
Okay.
Carlton Fisk.
No.
Gary Carter.
Defensively, yes.
Mike Piazza.
Yes. I'm saying yes, because I think one of the problems with the Hall of Fame is that we tend to go way too much on the offensive side, and defensively deserves as much consideration, and he's one of the greatest defensive catchers of all time.
Well, Bill Mazeroski will tell you that, because he didn't get in for his bat.
Yeah, he didn't catch either.
No, he didn't.
JC, sure. Just a point as well. You say that they're criminally unrepresented in the Hall of Fame. I think they're also criminally unrepresented in the MVP vote, which you rarely hear of a catcher winning that. And yet he finished in the top five in MVP voting twice. I mean, that is sent another stat that says what a great career he's had.
Well, and also that he's won World Series. I feel like catchers deserve a larger proportion of credit when a team wins a World Series, because not only are you an offensive part of the team, but you're basically running the whole pitching staff throughout, and so you make your pitchers better.
And Erika, a little birdie tells me that you may even have a trivia question that is related to the legend that is Yadi.
That is correct.
That's it. Would you like to share it with us? This is that moment.
No, actually, yes, because in honor of Yadier Molina hitting 2,000, which is not an easy thing to do as a catcher, and if anybody in this podcast knows, that's me. No, basically what I want to say is how hard it is for a catcher to get to 2,000. Who is a current active catcher who might get to 2,000? Or basically, I'm looking for the catcher that's still active, that's not Yadier Molina, who has the most base hits. Is it A?
Yes.
Jonathan Lucroy? Is it B, Buster Posey? Or is it C, Kurt Suzuki? Now, I say active players. Now, I know that Buster Posey has opted out of the season, but he's still not retired. He's still an active player.
He's fine.
And Jonathan Lucroy has been released by the Red Sox, but picked up by the Phillies. So he's still an active player. And they're still we're looking at these players. And I didn't pick Carlos Santana to be on the list because he's actually a legendary guitarist.
Very nice.
But don't boom.
No, and DH.
Just as a matter of interest,
and first baseman.
No, that's it. Because Carlos Santana has actually picked. He's actually, I've done some research. He's actually played more games in the outfield and as DH than he has as a catcher now, official. So he's not on the list.
Not outfield. First base. First base and DH.
And infield, I said, didn't I?
Okay. All right.
There you go.
Can I just confirm, Eric, with regards to the three options you've given us, are these the top three active in terms of the hit?
Which of these three active catchers have the most base hits currently?
Okay. I think I know. This one, okay. I think I can take a good guess at. Okay. Just before we move on from the opening strata, guys, we should mention that yesterday was the birthday, and it's been a bit of a thing for birthdays on this podcast. Yesterday was the birthday of the former head of Major League Baseball International, who has had a huge impact on British baseball, Mr. Clive Russell. Let's wish Russ a happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Clive.
Happy birthday.
You're very old.
I believe he turned 51.
He is quite old.
He doesn't look 52.
Oh, is it 52? I was going to say he doesn't look a day over 59. So that
and the social security number and bank account is...
Well, happy birthday to Russ. We love Russ. And
Britain's greatest Twins fan.
That's right. The UK number one Twins fan. I don't know if anybody's going to mention it, so I'm going to mention it myself, that the 24th, which was, 2 days ago, was my 11th anniversary with my lovely Louise. I celebrated 11
years. I think we should do a separate podcast with just anniversaries and birthdays.
Does anybody have any birth announcements?
No birth announcements.
Any quinceañeras this week?
I'm amazed after my announcement that none of you said, give that woman a medal. I haven't heard any derogatory remarks.
Send that woman a Specsavers.
Eric has eaten 3 waffles already on the show.
Oh man, Jesus! It's just like I'm waffling. You're waffling now. You're waffling.
All right, let's go.
Okay, let's hit the bell.
I did. Oh.
Okay. Well, who's our leadoff batter this week? Well, it's the playoff pitcher. What was murky is starting to get very, very clear. Who's in? Who's out? Who's your pick? Who's your dark horses? JC has.
Well, let me first go through which teams are in for certain and which are still on the bubble. Of course, this is as of the timing for our recording here today. The American League is locked in terms of the 8 teams that will be going to the playoffs. And I feel I could do a whole show listing all of these 16 teams, so I'll try and go quickly. Tampa Bay Rays, Oakland A's, Minnesota Twins, Cleveland Indians, New York Yankees, Houston Astros, Chicago White Sox, and Toronto Blue Jays. Those are your American League teams. In the National League, you've got the Los Angeles Dodgers, the Atlanta Braves, the Chicago Cubs, the San Diego Padres, Cincinnati Reds, Miami Marlins. The two teams that are not in yet, but are currently the teams that are expected are San Francisco Giants and St. Louis Cardinals. The teams looking in but still have a chance, and by the time you listen to this, may be in the playoffs, are the Philadelphia Phillies and the Milwaukee Brewers. And then the one team still mathematically possible at the time of our recording, though very unlikely, are the New York Mets.
That's my existence, mathematically possible. On Earth. Funny that I'm a Mets fan.
But you've got to love the fact that we're a weekend away from the end of the regular season, guys, and there's still only a handful of teams that are completely and utterly mathematically eliminated. I mean, you know, where there's hope, there's a will. I'm not quite sure that's the
thing. I'd actually flip that, Goldie. I think we should all breathe a sigh of relief that it doesn't look like we're going to have 6 tiebreakers in order to start the playoffs and have teams sort of battling at the last second. It looks like it'll be cleaner in terms of the 16 teams.
I tried reading those tiebreakers. My head almost fell off. I mean, it's crazy.
But also, there's talk that if required, St. Louis, because of course the uneven schedule, having missed out so many games early in the season with the COVID issues, might have to play a single game or even a doubleheader on Monday against Detroit. That's not looking likely anymore, is it? I mean, are we going to avoid that predicament?
It's still possible. So, I mean, they haven't locked in their spot. It really depends on how they perform, the Giants, the Phillies, and the Brewers. But you know, hopefully it won't, because I sort of think this kind of muddies the waters a little. I'd rather have a clean 16.
Clean 16. You should copyright that. Really catchy.
Trademark.
Very catchy.
Trademark Debbie Downer.
The clean 16. 2020 Major League Baseball.
JC, what does it say about the two divisions? That basically the American League's been pretty sewn up. The eight teams, we know who's going through a while back, and yet the National League, there's still some unanswered questions. Does that suggest the National League that the standard isn't as high?
I think what you're going to see is it has impacts on the first series, which are best of threes played in the stadiums of the higher ranked team. And if you're fighting for a spot at the end of the season, what ends up happening is you throw everything at getting into the playoffs. So you don't line up your pitching rotation in the same way the teams that are already in line them up, which means that the National League, if you're one of those final teams, it's going to be all the more difficult to get through. In the American League, you're going to see the best playing against the best because all these teams are pretty much lined up. But still, we don't know who's going to be playing whom, and those matchups will make a big difference. So I think up until the last moment, it's going to be interesting to see what the matchups are for that first round.
I will say, guys, when you consider what Washington Nationals did last year on the back of two aces, what a difference that makes in a postseason when you've got two guys who can literally just shut down any offense. I would hate to be the team facing Cincinnati in the National League postseason in the first round of the postseason, just simply because they genuinely
have two aces. Johnny.
It is. Right now, it's exactly the point I'm making, Dave. It is Atlanta. What a nightmare. We need to tank the last two games of the season and try and slip out of second place, because that is the worst possible matchup in that first round.
Then you'd get the Marlins if you figured that out. But that's not going to happen.
And why not?
Because they've pretty much, I think they can't slip to three, can they, against the Cubs? I mean, I don't want to get too much into
that. This is the time of recording, so anything can happen.
Yeah, I don't want to get too much into that, but I think they're pretty safe for a two seed.
So let's talk about our teams, who we think are the most interesting. And I will kind of go out on a limb on a team we haven't talked much about on this podcast, but deserves props, and that's the Tampa Bay Rays. Because here is the team that's the best in the American League, and people have not talked about them. And there's such an interesting case study in sabermetrics, because if you look at the historic stats, things like home runs, batting average, I mean, they have two guys in their regular lineup in Hunter Renfroe and Zunino, who are both hitting, Zunino's hitting like 129, Renfroe's hitting 148. You're looking at a team for those type of statistics, and their starting pitchers, who are great pitchers, Blake Snell, Tyler Glasnow, Charlie Morton, Yarbrough, Fleming, these guys are good, but not big, you know, huge stats. And yet here's the team that's the best in baseball. And when I started looking at the numbers, if you look at WAR, wins above replacement, they are the best team position by position for WAR. So it'd be really interesting to see whether that is enough to get you into the playoffs, be a great playoff team, or when you get into these small series, that analytic element actually can carry you all the way to the World Series. And I think that's one thing I'm going to want to watch in the postseason.
And amazing about the Rays, I don't know the exact number, but I will say this, I think I can say this safely, under 10 quality starts, that starts at six innings or more, all seasons long.
Well, but part of that, Dave, the reason they've gone away with that is their bullpen's
which
fantastic.
Is what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, Nick Anderson's been great, Pete Fairbanks, Diego Castillo.
Incredible pen.
Yeah, great pen. But nevertheless, that's going to be a little bit of a wait. So Gouldy, who's your team to look at for the postseason?
Well, I'm going to go with an outsider because I do believe the postseason sometimes just comes down to the quality of the rotation. And if you've got a 1-2 absolute lights out, then I'm offering you a massive outsider. And I'm looking at the Cincinnati Reds. If only their bats could even perform mediumly well. I just think that they've got two such great, great starters that if they can go six, seven, eight innings for their starts, and we already know that their ace Bauer is capable of pitching lights out on short rest, which is again going to be vital. Then I think if you're looking for an outsider, that for me is the obvious selection. And I hate the fact that as it stands, my Atlanta Braves will be facing them in the first round of the playoffs.
And they got Joey Votto, good Canadian boy as well.
Yeah. Eugenio Suarez batting cleanup. I mean, they've got some decent hitters. They've just been a bit anemic of late.
Yeah, I mean, Votto's such a veteran, and he hasn't performed well over the last few years, but he's the type of guy who has so much talent that he can get on a hot streak and help carry that team offensively. Dave, what do you got?
I got the Jays, and I think the Jays are a real pain in the ass. They had that tough start. They didn't know where they were going to play. They wound up in Buffalo. They really took advantage of Buffalo. They have a young and stupid lineup that don't know that they shouldn't be in the playoffs yet, but I think they average under 26 years of age. They've got Vladdy, they've got Biggio, they've got Bichette, all these guys. But the thing that, for me, makes them scary is Ryu. Like, I think if they wind up going to Tampa, and playing Tampa, I can't see Ryu losing that first game, and then you need to split. It could get really dicey for Tampa very quickly.
So there was a famous line, Dave: Spawn insane and pray for rain, which was the idea that Johnny Sane and Warren Spahn were so great for the Braves and everyone else was terrible. With the Blue Jays, it's Ryu and then ew. The rest of their rotation is terrible. So you got
nothing.
What
about Walker?
Yeah, I mean, Walker, it's true. He is new. He was the one of the three guys who they brought in who could be really good. I don't disagree with that, but Tanner Rourke, not good. Robbie Ray, not good. So you're going to need to have Walker at the top of his game, and he's been a little uncertain.
That's true, but if those guys both pitch like they can pitch, they could sweep the Rays easily. It can't happen.
But that doesn't get you all the way to the World Series.
No, it doesn't. But I like them a lot. I think they're
Eric, and we should note you're wearing Oakland A's paraphernalia.
I am indeed. I'm wearing an Oakland A's cap, an Oakland A's T-shirt that I got in spring training, courtesy of the Oakland A's, and only because, you know, not just because I like Bob Melvin, not because I like Matt Olson. But also Matt Olson, who is only batting 190, he's still up there with the RBIs and hitting home runs left, right, and center.
Yeah,
it's typical Moneyball kind of stuff. But they're not doing full time Moneyball. You know, you have people say, "Oh, they're only winning because of Moneyball." They're playing exciting baseball, and that's the important thing, and that's why I like them. And also, it's the only team I have an affinity with that's left in the playoffs. My Expos are long gone, as we all know. My Tigers are way eliminated, as we all know. So, you know, romantically, I'm going to go with the Oakland A's because he always treated me nicely when I went to spring training and All-Star games and whatever.
That's the good guy theory.
They're the kind of club that when I call them up and I say, "What time does batting practice start so I can do interviews?" And they go, What time can you get here?
Like it to start? Yeah, exactly.
They're just great
clubs. All right, let's talk league winners for awards, because as of Sunday, that will lock in. We'll have statistics for each of the big awards: MVP, Cy Young Award, Manager of the Year. I will start because I have the easiest one with Cy Young for the American League. Shane Bieber is a lock. I think everyone agrees with that.
Yep.
National League, not as certain, but I agree with you, Goulding. You've pointed out this pitcher. Trevor Bauer has had such an amazing year, 100 strikeouts. You know, great ERA. So I think I'm going with him. American League MVP, I'm going with DJ LeMahieu, because I feel like the Yankees have been down so much and he's helped carry that team, batting average and throughout all statistics. And I'm choosing Mookie Betts for National League MVP, and I think this is a very arguable one. He's the top positional player when it comes to wins above replacement, but more than anything, he's helped carry a lineup that's struggled. You know, Cody Bellinger's been down this year, Max Muncy's been pretty bad, and so he's been that key spark plug. And my managers of the year are Kevin Cash in the American League for the Rays, and the obvious one, Don Mattingly for the Marlins. Gouldy, what do you got?
Well, I'm no one's in doubt with Shane Bieber, Cy Young Award winner in the AL. For the AL MVP, I'm going with my boy. He's in every single team I've got, and I love him, and that's Jose Ramirez, primarily because Cleveland's hitters have not been particularly good, and he has so massively not just carried that hitting lineup, but also in the last two, three weeks, he's been absolutely on a charge just when they needed him. You know, you look at where they've ended up, and they were struggling. They've been struggling in the Central all season, and yet they're comfortably into the postseason, and he has been absolutely on fire. I'm with you 100% in Cincinnati, primarily because I love my boys that do the business in a fantasy sense. Trevor Bauer's my boy. You didn't even mention he's had 11 starts, and with a sub-2 ERA and a sub-1 whip, he's only got 5 wins. That is tragic. That man has not had the run support he deserves, and yet he's never, ever, and he goes on short rest. He never complains. Absolutely love Trevor. He's definitely the Cy Young for me in the National League. And in the MVP, I'm going with Freddie Freeman. Obviously, I'm a Braves fan, but you look at his numbers, Dave. You look at his numbers, particularly. Sorry, I missed the irony. I missed the sarcasm. Yeah. My apologies. But come on, buddy, you can't argue with the numbers. What a player that boy is.
But he's got Marcelo Zuna in the lineup. I mean, you know, when you've got the 1-2 punch, it makes it easier to be good. For me, I choose a player who is picked up his team. And this is one of the big philosophical questions about this award, is whether it's just straight statistics or is it what the player has meant for the team. Have they been the most valuable player for their team and their team has done well as a result?
Yeah, but you can't criticize it just because he's got somebody else doing well in the lineup.
Not criticizing, just not giving him a trophy.
Well, I'm definitively giving him a trophy. The consistency of his play, the consistency of his health. You know, he's a proper club man. You know, Braves fans love him. Braves players love him. And when you, if you're in a clutch situation, who do you want going to the plate? As much as I love what Ozuna's done this season, I want Freddie there every single time. And that's in a lineup with Acuna. Acuna, who's
so
an
who
absolute
your managers
superstar.
Of the year? Who are your managers of the year?
Manny had COVID.
Only one, manager of Atlanta, because I can't possibly go against anybody else.
All right, Dave, Dave. Let's keep it moving.
This is a shill show right here.
Well, he's not the manager of the Mets, Dave, that's for sure.
I'll start off with the NL MVP. I agree with Josh, it's best. Having said that, you know, giving him credit because, you know, the picking up the lineup, I understand that. But those names that you mentioned, the Bellingers and the guys who have struggled, they're still names and they still have to be pitched to. You know, gently. So I don't know about that effect, but look, he's been everything they wanted. You can't believe Boston ever traded this guy. A team like Boston with all the money in the world, letting him go. Whether they're real building or not, I don't know how you do that. AL, I think it's Jose Abreu, actually. He's had that kind of breakout season I think we've been expecting since his rookie year. He's just exploded, and he's been great. Veteran presence in that very young clubhouse, 33 years old, still doing it from Cienfuegos, Cuba. And his defense has actually been a little bit better. I'm sure over 162 games he would regress to the mean there a little bit, but he's been better, so he deserves that. AL Cy Young, we know. NL Cy Young, I'd love to give it to DeGrom. I'm looking for every reason to give it to DeGrom. Josh and I were talking before the show. He's like, you know, it's harder to pitch on a bad team and get wins. Well, he has 4 wins. He won the Cy Young Award with an ERA under 2, and he had 10 wins, so we know he's never going to get wins. I know we're not supposed to care about wins. I want to give it to DeGrom, but I'm looking for stats to support it, and it just doesn't work this year. It's got to be power.
And yeah, no one's giving any love to you, Darvish, by the way.
I was just going to say, you, Darvish, is probably going, thanks a lot, Trevor. This could have been my year, you know, and that's it. You do look at you, Darvish's numbers, and then you look at Trevor Bauer's number, and you think, yeah, it's got to go to Trevor. But give, you know, give props to you, Darvish. He was a little unsung at Wrigley Field.
Hey, guys, we'd all love to have you, Darvish, in our fantasy team, but the fact is he has wobbled. He's wobbled in the stretch. Last 2 or 3 outings, last night, phenomenal.
Yeah, that's why he's got to go to Trevor.
Previously, he's wobbled. So, yeah, it is definitely Trevor.
To keep it moving, I'll just say that I agree with David. Jose Abreu is also another one that's like, you look at those numbers. I wanted to give NL MVP to Fernando Tatis, but again, you got to look at the numbers. I got to give it to Mookie Betts as well.
How can you give it to somebody who's earning $400 million? That's ridiculous.
Well, that's what he got traded in. That's why he's doing exactly what he's supposed to do, but I interrupted Dave. I forgot to hear what his manager of the year was.
Well, if you must know, it's Mattingly and Renteria.
Okay, well, that's
pretty obvious.
Yes, I'm going to go to Mattingly and
Kevin
Melvin.
Cash, man. The best team in the American League with all the numbers I talked about, Kevin Cash. Come on.
Kevin Cash did a great job.
Those
kids are ahead of schedule in Chicago.
We're moving on.
I don't want to be technical, but let's just rewind to the Jose Abreu conversation. How can a 33-year-old have a breakout season? I mean, he's produced at a pretty high level. He's 33. He's at the end of his career. You have a breakout at the beginning, don't you?
He had an incredible rookie season, and then he never produced on that level since then, and he's kind of broken back out. He started late. He started 27. He came over from Cuba.
Okay.
David, tell me about it. Man's been in my fantasy baseball team for years. He's never produced.
No more fantasy talk. That's enough now.
Something about starting late.
I'm wielding 2 waffles here. Come on. All right, here we go. That's it. That's it. The playoff picture, by the way. This is in the past 10 seasons that Mike Trout has been in Major League Baseball. He's only been in the playoffs once. Is that feel for Mike Trout? Poor Mike Trout, you know, denied.
They came out, Eric, with the top jerseys, most popular jerseys, and Trout was like 15th or something like that. It's just
he'll be trade bait sooner or later. And by the way, one more stat about this: now that the regular season's coming to an end, we talked about complete games recently. There have been 14 complete games. I know it's only been a 60-game schedule, but there's only been 14 games in the entirety of this season. thus far at the time of recording. But 40 years ago, guess how many complete games there were in the entire 1980 season? Take a guess, guys.
I don't know. Close. How many?
1980.
Quick guess.
100.
Josh?
56.
56 complete games in 1980?
116.
There were 536 complete games in 1980.
Wow. I forgot the zero. Just shows how much. Zero. 560 is what I said.
By the way, how many of those complete games this year were in seven-inning doubleheaders?
There you go.
But there you go. But this is supposed to say, to show what a change has been. Even if it was last year, I'll look up the stat for next week. But anyways, moving on.
Yeah, moving on. Mentioned Mike Trout, and should we feel sorry for him? A multi-hundred million, billion-dollar contract.
It's
beautiful
not about
wife,
the money,
beautiful
Goobie.
Children,
and it's not about Mike Trout.
Given
this next
talent,
week.
And it's not about Mike Trout. Now,
and we're
you
not
did
mentioning
mention,
him for MVP, which is crazy. We haven't done this in years since we haven't mentioned him for MVP.
We'll come back to that. We have been talking about managers, though, which leads us to our second pitch of the night, and that is charismatic managers. And the reason we want to do this is because, of course, the legend that is, and I love this man, Tommy Lasorda. What a great baseball man he's been. Turns 93 this week. Happy birthday to Tommy. But he's one of many truly great characters. David, tell us more.
Well, this has been I've had a bone to pick with MLB managers for some time, precisely because of guys like Lasorda, because of guys like Leland, and all these incredible personalities, Williams and Billy Martin, and all these guys who were, you know, staples of Major League Baseball, made Major League Baseball what it was. Characters, real characters. Lee Elia. I wanted to read you the Lee Elia transcription, and then I started reading it of his rant, his famous rant at the press after a game way back when, and realized very quickly that I couldn't do that. I'll give you a quick funny story. And today we have nothing but white bread when it comes to, like, managers. The most boring, vanilla, pedestrian characters. Joe Maddon is probably the best we have as far as a colorful personality right now. I'm trying to think of who would be more interesting. This is the most dull crop you have ever seen in your life. I remember I was at the baseball winter meetings, I think, in 2003 and 2004 in New Orleans. I was with Tommy Lasorda. I had to go get Tommy Lasorda and bring him over for a television interview, which I was going to conduct. I had to walk him across the street. I walked with Tommy Lasorda the entire way. Tommy Lasorda cannot stop cursing at me. Cursed F this, says that, you know, blah, 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 cursing. All he's doing, I got to go, and I got to go to the bathroom, and I got to take a blank, and blah, blah, blah. And he, unbelievable. And we were interviewing him about baseball's best movies. And I sit him down, and I say, what do you think of Major League? Is Major League too realistic? He's like, no, I don't like it. They curse too much. Tommy, are you kidding me? Where are these guys? Where have these guys gone? Josh, we need these guys back.
For sure, Dave. I mean, I always used to think of Major League managers as like your crusty uncle who you hate to death but really love. And that's what managers were. And they used to actually be these fonts of wisdom. And a couple of my favorite quotes from managers of yore. Leo Durocher, great manager for the Brooklyn Dodgers and the New York Giants and the Cubs. He was a real winning manager. He once said, baseball is like church. Many attend, few understand. And I love that quote, and that's smart. But even better was Billy Martin, who you referenced, David, who was the often drunk manager of the New York Yankees during the era of the Bronx Zoo. And my favorite quote from him was, I'm getting smarter. I finally punched something that couldn't sue me. I mean, I agree with you. The managers of that period were vastly more interesting. I do like Joe Maddon a lot. The one manager who actually has a great story is Lloyd McClendon, who has replaced Ron Gardenhire. He once got so angry that he pulled out first base in the middle of a game. So, you know, he's only an interim manager. They'll probably bring in someone who's more statistically oriented to replace him next year. The young managers, it's about the clubhouse now, right? It's about being someone who players have an affinity to. And it's no longer about that crusty uncle. I want the crusty uncle.
No. Yeah. Hal McRae? Remember Hal McRae in the locker room throwing bottles and stuff?
Yogi Berra was a manager. I mean, that was when it was fun. When you come to a fork in the road, take it. Or he hits from both sides of the plate. He's amphibious. Or my favorite was always go to other people's funerals. Otherwise, they won't go to yours.
but what seems to be a continual running theme here, guys, is these great characters that you're referring to, most of whom are from, you know, years gone by, do seem to have been somewhat crusty and bad-tempered. Earl Weaver, obviously being a perfect example, I was reading a little bit about him, and I love this, what he said to a reporter once, stop writing, this isn't the good stuff. I mean, you know, these guys understood the business of baseball, and that's not just in terms of the tactics on the field, but what the press, what the fans are looking for. And you could take an obvious parallel to that is a football manager. I mean, having worked in a journalistic sense in the world of football, you know, the likes of Harry Redknapp, the likes of Cluffy, the likes of Jose Mourinho, when he was actually a decent manager, you know, the press loved them because they always got great stuff. They seemed to understand what they were looking for, and they gave it in abundance, which is what made them so popular.
Well, and that's true in other North American sports, right? You look at like the Steve Kerrs of the world, Greg Popovich in basketball. These guys actually show and emote a lot of personality. And baseball is a sport that's criticized for not turning their players into bigger marketing items. The same could be true with managers. The managers can help build the sport as well, too, from a marketing perspective.
Yeah. I should have mentioned Dusty, by the way. Dusty can be fun. I shouldn't leave out Dusty.
Yeah.
And then, you know, James Leland, do you know why he came to Detroit in the mid-2000s?
So he could smoke more cigarettes?
Because it was one of the few cities that you could still smoke in bars and restaurants.
Yeah.
And once I was at Comerica Park, during the game, I was able to actually walk through the player. I was in a camera well, and I was able to come out of the camera well during the game, and it was in between innings. And so I ran out of the camera well and ran through the players' tunnel. And I turn around, and I hear somebody underneath the stands. It was psst. And I turn around, and he goes, got a light? And it's James Leland just standing there with a cigarette. Got a light? I said, no, I don't. I'm sorry. And he goes, God damn it. And he throws a cigarette, and he goes back to the dugout. And I just wanted a quick puff of cigarette before the next inning. And yeah, we miss that. Dave is right. We miss like the Tom Lasordas. We miss the James Leland's. The Casey Stengel was a character.
Bobby Valentine?
Bobby Valentine, who, of course, the famous story about when he got ejected from the game, yes. went into the locker room, then came back out wearing a disguise with glasses and mustache, a fake nose thing, and got ejected again.
So Valentine punched me in Japan. I was in Japan. The Mets were in Japan. It's year 2000. They went over to play their first two games against the Cubs. And I'm like, hey, Bobby, you got 5 minutes? He goes, oh, coming back tomorrow, kid. And wails me. It's hard, like, really hard.
David's sensitive, too. I think that would have probably hurt him.
I was like, oh, my God, Bobby Valentine punched me. This is great.
I'm never washing that bruise off.
I'm never washing that bruise again.
Hey, talking of Bobby's, just very quickly, Bobby Cox yesterday, guys, back in 2010, celebrated his 2,500th major league win as a manager. Only four guys that did it. I mean, he came across as a really sort of gentle level. But you were telling me before the show today, JC, that he was getting chucked out of games more than most.
He's the record holder for most ejections for a manager.
So even the legend, the boss.
2,500 ejection, not win. I thought you were going to say
2,500 wins on yesterday.
That's a strategy, right, for managers to be ejected. It's a way to get in between your player and the umpire, so the player doesn't get ejected. It also shows that you're in there for the player. So
yeah, you got your players back.
Managers would do that. It's a tactical choice.
There we go.
We love Bobby. Okay, moving on. And it's a third batter. And I'm going to cover this one, guys. It's just regarding, there's been a lot of discussion, and I'm sure you've seen it online, the whole COVID impact of empty stadiums, no fans. You know, has it actually helped some teams? And I've been looking into this. Here's an interesting one. You think about having 47,000 plus fans in a stadium and the impact that has on the heat, the air temperature. And this is a great stack. 1 degrees Fahrenheit will increase the distance a ball will fly by 4 inches. Now, we know baseball is a game of inches. So 1 degree Fahrenheit, You think of the difference the 47,000 plus fans would make to the heat of a stadium. There's an example of what a difference makes, but there's no heat. There is nobody in the stands. The obvious ones, fan noise and the impact that has. Big, memorable one, Alex Gordon in the 2014 World Series only knew that an error had occurred because of the roar of the crowd. The secondary roar after it hit what was a double ended up being a triple. There's another example that I came across, which was in the clinching game four, Red Sox v. Yankees. Yankees, of course, in 2004, leading 3-0. It seemed like it was all over for Boston. Boston's Kevin Miller drew a walk. Dave Roberts then comes in as a pinch runner. Mariano Rivera, the legendary closer, is trying pick-off throws. He did one, he did two, he did three, but he didn't do four. Why? Because the crowd started booing. They were getting fed up with what was going on. So he threw to home plate. Guess what? The legend that was Dave Roberts steals the base by a whisper, ends up being scored, and we all know the story. They go on to win the World Series on the back of being 3-0 down. That was all about peer pressure, about the fan pressure. They also say about home plate umpires and their response to crowd pressure. There was a recent investigation in the 2011 book Scorecasting concluded that the plate umpire is the single most reason why there is a home team advantage, because the home plate umpire, as a result of having all those crowd behind him giving him stick, will tend to favour the home side. Without that happening this season, therefore home field advantage starts to disappear. Communication issues. Famous occasion, game 5 of the 2011 World Series. Cardinal manager Tony La Russa tries to call the bullpen, tries to get two pitchers warmed up, relief pitchers. They couldn't hear him. There was misunderstanding. The wrong guy comes out. Yeah. The rest is history. And Toronto, guys, I was looking at the record for Toronto playing in Buffalo, obviously not their usual stadium. What a massive impact that's had for them. 15-8, their home field record. So, yeah, big changes. You would suggest that perhaps there has been the sort of impact having no crowd that we did not anticipate.
And you know what, Goldie, I think there are some intangibles there too. As someone who's played in front of two people and a dog, but also played in front of more than 10,000 players, I think that the greats feed off of the energy of a great crowd, that it helps you focus. It helps you really hone in on what's going on, the sound, the energy, and that's gone too. So it takes almost a different kind of player. I think the one stat you forgot to mention when you were talking about the heat of a full ballpark is that the article you were referencing indicated that a full stadium is the equivalent of 2,500 space heaters. That's wow. The type of warmth that you're putting in there.
Yeah. Yeah, and we all know what a difference the warmth makes. I mean, you just look at the impact this season had, the fact that we started so late. I mean, we all know how traditionally slow hitters are in April because it's cold. It's miserable, particularly if you're playing in Chicago. I mean, it's a pretty miserable existence, very hard to be effective, whereas you're playing in the warmth, the balmy weather of the summer, and this season has been all about July, August, September, and that's had a massive impact.
I'm curious to see, what these playoffs are going to be like without the fans. There's a clip I like to watch on YouTube every now and then. 2015 ALDS Game 5, Toronto and Texas. And the reason that I love that is, first of all, it had that famous 53-minute seventh inning. But I think the crowd in Toronto, and this is why I'm really going to – Toronto making the playoffs and then not being in Toronto or not having fans. I'm really going to miss this. The energy – of that crowd, if you watch that, the shaky camera, when the camera starts shaking, and the energy in that building and everything that was going on, and Jose Bautista's home run and how the roof almost popped off, we're going to miss all that. I think we're really going to miss that more than we do in the regular season in the postseason.
I don't know if there's any truth to the rumors, 2017, that apparently the noise during the World Series was so much that trash cam gate, that ultimately Houston just abandoned it because no one could hear. No one could hear the noise. I don't know if there's any truth to that, but that would be another interesting impact.
I think the energy will affect players, but I think from a viewership standpoint, I don't know how much it's going to affect it. I actually have been surprised by how much the laugh track, the soundtrack, the crowd track that we have has been effective when I'm watching games. That I, for a moment, will forget, oh, there are no fans here. It actually works for me as a spectator. Yep. So I don't know when we're watching it whether it'll have as much impact. I think it will certainly impact players, though.
And the only other thing we haven't mentioned, guys, when there is no fans and there is only just this sound effects in the background, is that players can hear each other. You know, outfielders giving each other orders, warning them about the wall, you know, which if it was a really loud, raucous home crowd, you wouldn't necessarily be able to impact. They can communicate so much clearer.
There have been some rumors that they might let a few people in for the postseason.
Yeah, and that would make sense. I mean, we're seeing that with the NFL being able to do it. So,
but in a neutral ground, does it matter? I mean, you know, we're going to let a couple of guys in Texas in to watch a neutral game. It's not going to be the same.
And the other question is, does that defeat the bubble, right? You're bringing in random people, and you've created this bubble, and then all of a sudden you have people.
Well, so it's okay, yeah. It's okay for fans to be sick, and, you know, it's not okay for players to be sick. It's a little touchy, I think.
But I read that one of the reasons why Texas was given this postseason bubble scenario was because as a state, they are much more inclined towards being a little bit more relaxed so that there will be the possibility to bring
them. And they have worse COVID numbers as a result. So it's more dangerous to bring them in than in another state where perhaps people have been taking it more seriously.
Yeah, it'd be interesting one to see. Okay. Thank you.
That was a weak bell. Do that again.
I'll do that again. Sorry, I'm trying to do a...
Thank you.
Bell up.
a little reverb on
but that. I'll tell you what. By the way, I spoke to friends in Toronto who were actually... I spoke to friends in Toronto who actually said, no, they're getting record numbers of people watching their Blue Jays in Buffalo, and they're actually wondering whether, you know, this Buffalo thing, well, not, you know, the Eagles, of course, are happy to have the Blue Jays back to normality back in Sky Dome / Rogers Center. They're not dissing the whole Buffalo thing. There you go.
Well, Eric, just on that point, Surrey County Cricket Club, every season, obviously the Oval is the home of Surrey County Cricket Club. They also have this sort of like sister stadium down in Guildford, which is tiny, but they have a festival every year. They have one of their home games, proper county championship game, in Guildford. So I wonder whether Toronto may consider doing the same, maybe a couple of games a season.
It didn't work for Montreal when they went to Puerto Rico.
No, exactly. And that's why I'm against the Tampa Bay thing.
City, a couple of games a year. Dodgers played in Jersey City. The Celtics used to play in Hartford a couple of games, right?
Yeah, maybe a game or two.
Keep it home. Moving on. Because it is time for the
seventh inning stretch.
Look at that. All right. We got our baseball book of the week. And here's a nice accidental baseball book of the week. Because I never would I have thought going to a secondhand bookshop. Yes, some of them are open now here in London. Whereas I was able to stumble upon the annotated Casey at the Bat. A book written by Martin Gardner. Well, actually, obviously written by Thayer originally. But here's a book that, you know, if you're a baseball fan, you would never expect to find any book about baseball in a secondhand bookstore here in London. And the fact that this one is even hard to find. First edition, 1967, a compilation of the fantastic poem, which was written in 1888, of Casey at the Bat. And those who grew up with the poem, and here's the thing, bear with me here. You can have your Shakespeare.
We always do, Eric.
You can have your Shakespeare.
It's more like an obligation now.
You can have your Shakespeare. You can have your Dante. You can have your Emily Dickinson. And here's what Martin Gardner said about Casey of the Bat. Does it go in there with, you know, in the same category as Edgar Allan Poe, Casey at the Bat? And his quote was, would you criticize a superb apple crumble if it didn't taste like a crepe Suzette? No is the answer, because it's just, here is your fantastic slice of apple crumble.
That's too complicated for me.
And the thing is, last week I did Baseball Haiku, which might be a little highbrow for you guys, I know, a little too culture for people like us.
Almost everything is.
Now, Casey at the Bat, here's the thing. If you actually grew up with Disney cartoons, there was a fantastic cartoon based on Casey at the Bat poem. And that's something we'll be posting on our everyone wonders, where does There's No Joy in Mudsfield coming from? It's from Casey at the Bat poem. So many quotes have been taken out of that one poem, which, again, and like I said, Jackie Gleason, Vincent Price, even Penn and Teller have actually done a spoken word album on Casey of the Bat. So there's
what
my.
What do you think went on in Mudville? What do you think? What kind of town was Mudville? Do you think
it was a spa town? They had great facials.
This is a family show.
Can I ask a question?
Go on.
Eric, you always go to bad places.
Funny you should say that, because one thing I didn't find at that same secondhand bookstore was I didn't find any Josh books, because let's face it, they're probably out of circulation. Now, I found this book, Baseball Stars of 1972, which it is, oh my God, I couldn't believe it. 50p it cost me at a secondhand bookstore. Had the owner known how much this is actually probably worth back home, you know, it's like I just took 50p. Unfortunately,
60p back home.
No, I'm sure. But this goes for about 20 to 30, and I bought this for a pound. Of Casey of the Bat, I bought, you know. But Baseball Stars 1972. This is the thing about this. Roberto Clemente is on the cover. It's it has a thing inside saying, why is he overlooked as a superstar? Hopefully this will be his year. And tragically, a few months after this was published, at the end of the year, he passed away in a plane crash. One thing it also does, it says inside, when will Hank Aaron quit, before or after he breaks Babe's record? See, there you go. Little time machine, little kind of time capsule there. So
Aaron,
moving
by
on.
The way, Aaron,
surely, if
you don't
surely.
Have to buy every book that you baseball book you come across.
In this country, you take what you can. In the UK, it's hard to find a baseball book.
Stephanie must want to throw you out with all this crap you're accumulating every time.
Of which there are many. Yes.
Can I point out that if the price 50p a book is the determining factor on you getting onto this podcast, then Josh should be a shoe-in for next week.
Oh,
way overpriced.
Wow.
Moving on.
With friends like these.
Moving on. Now, in this country, I'm sure we've all seen Happy Days in the United Kingdom, because that's another show, Happy Days. Happy Days takes place in Milwaukee. It's set in the 50s, but it was filmed in the 70s. Yes, it's a show that I grew up with, and everyone in this podcast obviously could probably quote a few bits. You know, you have Richie Cunningham and Ron, a cast of thousands. Probably just Ron Howard.
Chachi.
Howard. Ron Howard, of
Tom
course.
Tom Bosley.
Of course, yes. But here we go. During the time it takes place, where it's set in Milwaukee, there's one scene where they go to a Milwaukee Braves game, and Joni catches a home run by Stan Musial. So, of course, in those days, it was the Milwaukee Braves where that would have been the local baseball
detail.
Team. Mm. But there's one episode where Hank Aaron actually has a cameo, and this was 1980. He looks a little older, and Mr. Cunningham, is trying to find a radio ad for his hardware store, and they bring in the actual Hank Aaron as a cameo onto the show to do radio spots.
Cool.
But here's the best bit about the Happy Days. In 2008, the Milwaukee Brewers brought in the entire cast, the surviving cast of Happy Days, into Miller Park for a Happy Days Appreciation Day, and they unveiled the bronze Fonz statue. They were originally going to unveil the statue of Arthur Fonzarelli in front of Miller Park. But then there was protest. Well, he's not a baseball player. He doesn't belong at a baseball stadium. So they put him by the Riverwalk, which I don't know Milwaukee that well. So there is a statue. There's a bronze Fonz statue.
That's great.
That was unveiled by the Milwaukee Brewers.
Little known fact, Henry Winkler, who played the Fonz, one of the nicest guys in Hollywood.
And that brings up my next subject, because we actually have a photograph of young Josh Chetwin with Henry Winkler, who plays Fonzarelli. Can you give us a little backstory to what the hell is that all about?
Yeah, well, my mom was an actress. She was on General Hospital for a stretch, and then did a lot of guest starring bits on shows during that era. Shows like Different Strokes, Facts of Life. She played Molly Ringwald, who had a small role in Facts of Life. She played her mom. And one of her best friends was a casting director who had worked on Happy Days. So we went by there. I got to Meet the Fonz. And then many years later, when I was covering Hollywood, I interviewed Henrik. I did not reference our crossing paths when I was a child, but again, really just a great guy. And obviously a great actor, did a lot of great stuff after Arrested Development, tons of
stuff. Lords of Flatbush.
Well, what a life you've led, JC. I'm loving this. I didn't know anything about it. You've met the great Fonz.
Multiple occasions.
If you check out our social handles, it's I've actually almost called up his dad to Josh's dad to scan the photo, but Josh actually had it on him luckily, and so it's on our social handles. Check out Josh Sedwin and Arthur Fonzarelli.
It's laminated.
I was going to say, do you have that in your wallet and just show it to
I have some great pictures of me and Fonz too. My favorite was People Magazine. They had a picture of Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman, and this was before photobombing. For whatever reason, they cut the picture strangely, and I'm in there with them. It's Nicole, wow. Tom, and me at the Oscars.
Nice. Yeah.
Were you arrested moments later?
Yeah, I was in black tie and everything. It's the only other time I wore black tie other than our show.
Yeah, a clip on, no doubt, because you didn't have me there to tie it for you.
Moving on. Yep. Here we go. So just a quick reference, and we'll just do a quick film here. It's a film, I don't know if any of you guys have seen it. It's The Other Guys, starring Mark Wahlberg and Will Ferrell, filmed in 2010. Okay. That's actually a little...
Good movie. Fun.
It's actually a very funny movie. So if you've ever seen The Other Guys, there is one scene where Mark Wahlberg has to go to a group therapy meeting with other NYPD policemen. He's actually a police officer in New York. And they have to, and he recounts the story where he lives through that nightmare every night. He lives through that story where 6 months ago he was doing security at Yankee Stadium and somebody was coming through the players tunnel with a weapon and it was coming towards him. And he took out his gun. And he actually told the guy to drop the weapon, and he shot at him. And what happened was he actually ended up shooting Derek Jeter in the ass. Because Derek Jeter had a baseball bat, and he goes, "I'm Derek Jeter, you bleep." And then all the other police officers in this group therapy thing, "Yeah, I can't believe you shot Jeter in the ass, the biracial angels in pinstripes." And another guy goes, "You could have shot A-Rod instead." It's just a funny scene. And Derek Jeter is actually in, and he has to get shot in the ass by Mark Wahlberg.
We see that.
And actually is Derek Jeter. No, apparently there's also another scene that they actually got cut out of the film, which I found out about, that there was another scene where Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg walk along, and there's a homeless guy going through some garbage, and he starts talking to them, and it's Derek Jeter as a homeless guy. It's like, oh, wow, his career went downhill after you shot him in the ass, didn't you? So, but they cut that. They cut that scene out. But we'll see if we can post that in our social handles. But that's The Other Guys. It's a funny film, and just check it out because Derek Jeter has a cameo in it. It's a hell of a funny scene as well.
Just search Derek Jeter and homeless, and you'll find it.
There you go. Yes. Now, that's it for the sending instructions. I gotta finish off this trivia question. And as I mentioned before, I asked these guys which current active catcher currently has the most base hits that isn't Yadier Molina, who recently got his 2,000th base hit. So, which of these three has the record for most career base hits as a catcher? Is it A, Jonathan Lucroy, B, Buster Posey, or C, Kurt Suzuki? Who's going to go first?
I'll go first because I looked it up on Google and I know it's
Kurt Suzuki. What are you saying?
You got with Kurt?
Kurt Suzuki?
Sorry, no free commercials. I looked it up on a well-known search engine. and I found it. No, I don't know. I don't know, but I'm going to go with Kurt Suzuki just for a laugh.
Kurt Suzuki, I know. And who's Josh going to go for?
This is one of those messing ones, right? Because Buster Posey is by far the most successful catcher. I know Lucroy had some really good years.
Really?
But I'm going to go with Posey. I'll be that fool who jumps right into the trap.
Well, this is going to work out really conveniently, guys, because looking at these three, Suzuki's platooned for so many years, so I can't believe that it's him. Buster Posey's been injured for most of his career, so even though he's clearly the best of the three, I'm not going with him. So I'm going with Lucroy.
Lucroy's a good guess. That's what I would have gone with, but I figured we'll each take one this time.
All right. So as the time of recording, because obviously two of them aren't active at the moment, but they're not retired, Jonathan Lucroy has 1,128 base hits.
Okay. Okay. It's not good that you go with him first, but okay.
Let me write that down. Yeah,
1,128, yeah.
Yeah. Or Tezuki, 1,345.
Oh, no.
Buster Posey, who, as we mentioned, has opted out of this season, but might return next season, 1,380.
Hey!
So Buster Posey is the current one who could probably eclipse, well, I don't know actually anymore.
He's got to get 600
base hits before his career ends to surpass Yadier Molina.
You can send me my plush toy for my victory.
I'm never looking up trivia answers again.
I've got about as much hits in this trivia answers as Stanton's had since he's come back from the IL.
Ooh,
there we go.
Bumming out big time here, guys. It's
mailbag, Gouldie, mailbag.
The mailbag, okay, Johnny, moving on.
The postman always rings twice.
Another film reference. I got that. Okay, moving on. Twitter. We've, as always, to all our listeners, thank you guys for getting in touch. Lovely to hear from you. We can only do a couple, obviously, from a time perspective. So I'm going to, first of all, start with Paul Mitchell. We're all a big fan of Paul's, BBC Scotland commentator. I know he's a good mate of yours, Eric, and commentates
great
on
guy.
Sterling. Great guy. He says, how much money would the Yankees need to spend to be as good as the Rays? I'm loving that. Bit of an ironic comment there. JC, you talked about the Rays early doors. Is it just a case for the Yankees of throwing money at it to be as good as the Rays?
Yeah, I mean, it's a reflection of where we are in baseball now, right? Money cannot buy you championships the way they used to. Eric made this great point that in the last 20 World Series, you've had a different winner every year. He posted that on our social media. And that's a reflection of there's a reasonable amount of parity now, and money doesn't get you, brains get you all the way to the World Series.
Because you remember the early days of Channel 5 baseball. I mean, the Yankees just seemed to win it sort of pretty much every year, at least so it seemed.
They won three out of four up until 2000.
Yeah.
And isn't that great for baseball? I mean, you look at the Premiership. I mean, there's only a few teams that can win it. We know that Leicester had that incredible season. But it's a wonderful thing to be a baseball fan in the United States and Canada and know that your team has a shot, even if they're poor, even if they have very, very few resources like the Rays, they can still dominate. I mean, that is real victory for the game, I have to say.
Absolutely. Well,
but this is the argument for the expanded playoffs, which we all sort of turn our nose at. Mm-hmm. So,
Yeah. And actually be great for Premier League football. Even West Ham might have a chance. Moving on. Anthony J at Jelly Road 7. We were talking about Trevor Bauer earlier. He talked about Trevor. He said, boys, have you seen his vlog on YouTube? Wonderful insight into a major leaguer's world. And if so, does anyone have any insight into his feud with Scott Boras? I know a few of you have watched it, guys. Any insight on his feud with Scott Boras, the legendary agent?
Yeah, Scott Boras has called out Bauer because Bauer has been like, hey, look, I own my own person. I want to sell it in the way I want to sell it. And I am going to say what I want to say and be very honest about baseball. And Boras wants to be in control. He doesn't want his players to be in control. He wants to be in control. And so when he sees a player stepping out and being every bit as savvy as he is, he pulls back and he gets angry. So he's been very critical of Bauer. I'm definitely on Team Bauer for this. I mean, Bauer doesn't say things I like all the time. He's definitely a unique bird. But the ability for the players to control what they want to do and not need agents. And I worked as an agent, as you know. It's something that I support.
Okay, on Facebook, David Robson. David, thank you for this. Super excited, he says, to watch my Blue Jays in the playoffs next week. I've got a feeling it won't be for particularly long. Not sure we're going to be that successful in the playoff run, but such a young team, be a great experience, you never know. Keep the pod coming. That's very sweet of you, David. Dave, you mentioned the Blue Jays as your super outside tip. And it is all about the youth, isn't it? I mean, this can only, irrespective of whether they beat the Rays in the playoffs, at the end of the day, this is a really young side and it's great experience.
Future is bright, good farm system, fantastic fan base, as Eric mentioned. Ratings are up. They deserve, you know, they have a bright future. I think there's an outside shot that, you know, they take a round or two this season.
But as a Montrealer and a Tigers fan as well, I just can't go for them.
You can't do that. I always wondered about that.
Can't do like, that.
Why like, wouldn't you do that?
If the Mets all of a sudden cease to exist, would you become a Yankees fan?
No.
But they're the only Canadian team in the major leagues.
But it's like the Canadians and the Maple Leafs.
So Johnny, Johnny, next time Tottenham are in the Champions League final, I guess you'll be wearing a Tottenham shirt. Well, yeah.
I'm not going to be wearing a Tottenham shirt, but if they're the only English team in the final, will I support them? Yes, absolutely. I will,
you're
because I'm supporting
man.
The English team. Well, I'm not going to support an Italian team or a Spanish team over an English team. You see, but that's why I love rugby. You see, we don't have that sort of intensity of rivalry. Okay.
Last one.
Okay, last one. This is also on Facebook. Chris Bailey, which round of the playoffs will the Dodgers lose in this year? JC, as a Dodgers man.
Yeah, no, I hope springs eternal for Dodgers fans. And I think that the one thing they really have going for them this year is Clayton Kershaw has been disappointed in the playoffs in the past, but that's because he's had to play a 162-game schedule and had to deal with injuries. If you have a healthy Kershaw who's now hasn't had to pitch as much this year, that's going to add a tremendous amount to what they have in terms of their starting pitching, and I think will be very valuable for them. Plus, Cody Bellinger's been playing better later. So
I say that the Dodgers will lose against the Oakland A's in the World Series. Revenge for 1988. There you go. That's my two cents.
Ow. Okay.
That's the end of the mailbag.
But can I just mention the tweet of the week, guys? There's no question here. You don't have to respond, but this has to get a mention. On Twitter, Mike Linwood, all he wrote, I prefer the Eric and David show. There's only been two likes to that tweet, one from me and one from Josh. Mike, that was hilarious. We love that.
I didn't like it.
Did you not like it? Did you like it as well, Dave?
I think it makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely.
It's just logic.
That brings the mailbag. That's it, guys. The mailbag's done. Do keep in touch, though, guys. We'd love to hear from you. Apologies we can't get more on. We appreciate everyone that gets in touch with the show. We'll try and make sure that we have a different individual's question each and every week. The social handles, as always, on Facebook, The Johnny and Josh Show, on Twitter and Instagram, at Johnny and Josh. Do get in touch. Do subscribe and do be a part of the family. Don't forget, the Fantasy Extra is out. James Holden with his latest tips for this, the last weekend of the regular season. Guys, I know you're playing a bit of fantasy. JC, last time I saw you were in second place in your league. How's it going, buddy?
I'm 2 points out of the top. I don't, you know, it's possible, but I don't see it happening. But Goldie, let's talk about you, because I know you're only asking me this question as an entree into you talking about your fantasy.
No,
so give it to us quickly.
Guys, it's going horrible. I was looking at a double title season for the first time in my fantasy baseball career, and I think it's all going to go horribly wrong over the weekend. I don't want to talk about it. I'm too upset. I don't want to talk about it. Moving on. And that's me. That's it. That's it from us. Dave, Eric, I can see Eric's already consuming the waffle. Guys, thank you so much for your company, as ever. Anything else you want to say?
No.
Cheers. Good luck on the final couple of days, Goldie. You never know.
Thank you, Jesse. Very kind. That's it from us. Thank you for listening to the Johnny and Josh Show with Dave and Eric in the background. Maybe renaming the show. We'll run a poll and do that for next season. But that's it from us. Enjoy the last weekend of regular baseball. We look forward to having your company this time next week from us all. Bye-bye.